This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. The Carnival Cruise teen girl, the little cheerleader, we now learn fought for her life. Strangled dead, a mechanical strangulation. What is that? And why no charges? I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. I want to thank you for being with us. Teen girl Anna, dead on a Carnival cruise. Her body is found stuffed under a cabin bed. Life vests stuffed on top of her to hide her dead body. In the last hours, Anna Kettner, the teen girl cheerleader going to that Titusville Christian school, already had her future mapped out, very organized, planning to join the military and ultimately be a police officer in the K-9 unit. That little girl, the one scrubbed in sunshine. Let's see a picture of Anna, please. There you go. That's Anna Kettner. She's dead. Yes, the first photo was her experimenting with blonde hair. She's dead, stuffed under a cruise ship bed, wrapped in a blanket, mummy style, we've been told, and then with life jackets crammed on top of her to hide her body. Listen.
Anna Kettner's death on board a Carnival cruise ship now ruled a homicide, her autopsy stating she was mechanically asphyxiated by another person or persons. The medical examiner finds two bruises on the side of Anna's neck. She may have been held in a bar hold, meaning her attacker held an arm across her neck.
See her in her little dive shirt? She loved to scuba, she loved to snorkel, she loved to fish, loved being out on the water. Joining me at the scene, private investigator Robert Crispin with Crispin Special Investigations, former federal task force for the Department of Justice, that's the U.S. government. He has worked his entire life in this jurisdiction. It is a floating crime scene, and now, Robert Crispin, that we learn it was a mechanical strangulation. I'm going to go to Dr. Kendall Crowns in just one moment. The crime scene. When you are living in close quarters with someone sharing a small cramped space, the DNA processing of that scene becomes even more vital. I mean, it's like a petri dish of DNA, and now it's all gone. Can you refresh everyone's recollection about the cruise ship investigators that first processed that scene?
Well, scary enough, those guys aren't crime scene tech guys, and they're not former law enforcement guys. These are guys who took a test on the internet, got their license, and all of a sudden they're protecting, 4,000 people on a cruise ship. But what's critical about this homicide is going to come down to DNA. It's going to come down to DNA. And what the medical examiner says in the autopsy, the cause of death, et cetera, et cetera. More importantly, did the victim fight? DNA under her nails? Did she scratch the suspect? In all of these cases, Nancy, these victims fight for their life. They're clawing. DNA is under their nails of the suspect who's trying to kill them. This is going to be very, very, very important, critical evidence to go towards an arrest, an indictment, or something to get this guy arrested and put in jail. It's going to take a little bit of time now because obviously we don't have a confession, because if we had a confession, he'd already be in jail. So the FBI slowly,
hold on just right there. Robert Crispin, I heard you referring to cause of death and MOD, manner of death, as et cetera, et cetera. Okay. I remember reading one of my own transcripts of a trial. I tried a felony, and I was writing the appeal to hold the conviction on appeal. And I must have been very, very tired by the end of that trial because I was arguing to the judge, and I was making my legal argument and said, and judge, blah, blah. Okay, like you're et cetera, et cetera. I know one person, aside from myself, that will take issue with the cause of death and manner of death being called, et cetera, et cetera. Dr. Kendall Crowns joining us, Chief Medical Examiner, Tarrant County, host of a hit new podcast, Mayhem in the Morgue. He is an esteemed lecturer at the Burnett School of Medicine at TCU. Dr. Kendall Crowns, thank you for being with us. Got a lot of questions for you about mechanical strangulation. What is it?
So mechanical asphyxia is basically some sort of compression on the chest or neck that makes it impossible for you to breathe. Specifically, mechanical strangulation, what they're referring to as a bar hold or choke hold, is where the arm is placed across the front of the neck and then drawn back with the other arm, compressing your trachea and making it impossible for you to breathe. The other situation is the carotid sleeper hold, where they put your neck in the crook of the arm and then compress both sides of your carotid, causing the blood not to flow to your brain and you pass out. So either one of those scenarios could be what they're defining as mechanical asphyxia or mechanical strangulation.
Okay, let me understand something. You put your arm across your neck to demonstrate mechanical strangulation. But we have learned tonight that Anna had two bruises on the side of her neck, not the trach, not the front, the side of her neck. What does that mean?
So it could mean when they're compressing the neck with the arm that they're placing pressure with the other arm along the side of the neck, and the arm is kind of to the side causing the bruising. It could also mean that he placed her in a carotid sleeper hold and using the crook of his arm, both sides of his arm compress on either sides of her neck, compressing her carotid and carotids, and caused her to pass out and die from lack of blood to her brain.
You know, another thing, let me check with Shannon Butler on this. Investigative reporter, WFTV Channel 9 in Florida, who's been on Anna's case from the very beginning. Shannon, we are being told that while the entire autopsy is not complete, specifically toxicology and other lab work, that there was no sign of sex attack. Have you learned that as well?
Yeah, that's what we understand. I mean, remember, most of the information that we had been getting came mostly from family members, but that death certificate, at least preliminary information, does suggest that that's the case, Nancy.
Okay, I'm looking at the death certificate. What part of the death certificate tells you there was no sex attack?
Well, the death certificate does not, but information that we've received from sources, from the family members, have indicated that that is not the situation.
Really? Really? Okay, because you referred to the death certificate as proving there was no sex attack, and there's not one word on this death certificate, according to my reading, that says anything about lack of sex attack or sex attack. So it's not on the death certificate. So we're getting the no sex attack knowledge from the family. Is that correct?
The family and from other sources that are close to this investigation. But that doesn't mean, Nancy,
okay,
we're still a long way from having all of the answers that we need in this case. And I don't know that anybody is satisfied with the information that's been released so far.
You know, Dr. Kendall Crowns, I want to follow up on what Shannon Butler just told us from WFTV. Dr. Kendall Crowns, if we don't have the toxicology report yet, then how am I to believe that we have a DNA result from a rape kit?
Well, toxicology reports can take up to 6 to 8 weeks, so you potentially don't have the DNA report back from a sexual assault kit or a rape kit because there hasn't been enough time passed. So again, there'd have to be a little more testing done, a little more stuff done by the crime labs before it's all back. My answer to that is maybe there is still DNA out there waiting to get done, and we just don't know about it yet.
Dr. Kendall Crowns, how long did you say it would take for a tox report? Can't there be a rush on it?
There can be a rush on it, but typically it can take 6 to 8 weeks, depending on what drugs are on board, especially if there's some sort of synthetic or designer drug being looked for. It can take up to 2 months.
What do you mean by synthetic or designer, please?
Like synthetic marijuana, bath salts, those kind of designer drugs that every so often show up that we don't have a lot of specific testing for, so more has to be done. Every day the drug chemists are making new variations on drugs that the toxicology labs are constantly having to test for to try and keep ahead of.
You know, another issue, straight out to Sydney Sunra joining us, Crime Stories investigative reporter. Sydney, the word is getting put out that there was no sex attack and that drugs or alcohol did not play a contributing factor in her death. We don't even have the tox report. We don't have a DNA report. So where is this coming from? It's premature.
I agree. It's premature. It's coming from family members who have seen a more detailed death certificate than has been released to the public. But how do we know? How do they know this information if those reports have not been made official? There are so many confusing details about this case, Nancy.
You know, Sydney, I think that people very often, they project what they want to be true. There was a lot made at the get-go, and this is on a court video. We have it on video where a civil attorney stated that the teens had been drinking. Now, Carnival Crew says, oh, no, they were absolutely not drinking. But again, Robert Crispin, the proof will be in the pudding. Everybody can say whatever they want to say right now. No sex attack. Sex attack. No drugs or alcohol. Drugs or alcohol in the system. We don't have any of those results. And again, remember the bands that everybody wears on cruise ships? They will tell whether you, I said earlier, had a bag of chips, much less a drink. Now, I don't know that Carnival Cruise would give a minor a drink. So it may very well not show up on a wristband. Again, they're denying any alcohol was served to a minor. But could the minor get the alcohol in another way? Haven't you ever driven up to a 7-Eleven and you see a bunch of teens out there and they're paying people or asking people to bring them out beer?
Absolutely, I've seen it. As a matter of fact, Carnival's blanket statement has to be that, Nancy. They can't come out to the public and say that they serve minors at sea. They can't do that. And any of this information that's coming out is being released from the family. And don't forget, Nancy, they had at least 24 hours before that ship got back to the port of Miami that family was able to get together, concoct their story, and see or decide what they're going to release. They had a lot of time. Family protects family. And that's why this family may not want to release that she was sexually assaulted, if she was. They don't want that out there.
Hey, Crispin.
Yeah.
I learned that Anna was feeling badly. She's felt poorly. It was because of her braces were hurting her. And she asked to go back. She asked to go back to the room early during dinner. She went back, but then she got dressed up and reemerged. And what we're learning is she had on this cute little outfit, but in one report, Crispin, just one, it said Anna was wrapped only in a blanket with life vest stuffed over her. Only in a blanket, which led me to believe that she was naked under the blanket. That's yet to be borne out. But if that is true, or if she was partially clothed, why else would she have been partially clothed, stuffed under a twin bed, or naked, wrapped in a blanket, unless there had been a sex attack? What I'm saying is, just because there's not DNA, just because there's not sperm on or in her body, does not mean there was not a sex attack.
Correct. And if you go back and you listen to one of the statements that was made from Anna's ex-boyfriend's father, that the stepson had climbed on top of her one night when she was in bed.
You know, I know that Project Innocence and the Poverty Law Institute and all the defense bars are going to get mad when I say this, but they can just chew on this. When you don't know a horse, look at his track record. Listen.
She just didn't feel safe around him. She's scared to tell anybody because she was scared that he would do something to her.
Joshua, too, says Anna's close relationship with her stepbrother was one-sided. The 16-year-old is obsessed with Anna and made her uncomfortable with romantic advances. He once even caught him trying to climb into Anna's bed while the two were on FaceTime, Anna already asleep.
He says, "Dad, I tried to tell the parents, that this was happening, and they didn't want to believe me. He's like infatuated, attracted to her like crazy. He's always wanted to date her.
Chris doesn't realize it's his fault. This whole thing is his fault. If he would have taken the warnings that Anna's ex-boyfriend gave him, then she would still be here. So keep that in mind, Christopher. I blame you.
That from Inside Edition and at Just Mom 1984 on TikTok. That's Anna's bio, Mom. So explain to me, Shannon Butler, investigative reporter, WFTV. According to what we're learning from her ex-boyfriend, Joshua Two, it's not just what she said happened. He was on FaceTime with her. They were FaceTiming late at night. Anna fell asleep, but the FaceTime was still going. And he, according to reports, saw the 16-year-old stepbrother crawl on top of her. He saw it. It's not just her saying that happened to her. And then he goes on to state she did not feel safe around him. She was scared to tell anybody because she thought he would, quote, do something to her.
That is what he said to reporters here. He also told his dad that, and his dad told reporters that there was always this fear Anna had of her stepbrother, but it wasn't just something that she talked about. The boyfriend said he knew about it, and then he saw that when it happened on FaceTime and even said, like, get off of her. So there are a lot of questions about exactly what Anna told him and if that really happened, but that was his statement to reporters just after she was found dead on that cruise ship.
To Dr. Janie Lacey, licensed psychotherapist, CEO of Life Counseling Solutions. She's an author. She's the star of her own podcast on YouTube. Dr. Janie Lacey, thank you for being with us. Why wouldn't she tell her parents? Why did everybody else know she was afraid of the teen stepbrother?
Well, Nancy, I think this speaks to a larger issue that I see in blended families, especially. Sometimes adults minimize concerning behaviors because acknowledging them, Nancy, would mean they have to confront deeper problems in the family structure. And there's often like this pressure to present this unified, happy family image. But when children don't feel safe and their safety doesn't come first, and especially when a young woman says she's uncomfortable when a boyfriend reportedly witnessing inappropriate behavior, I mean, those things can't be dismissed. So I would suggest that she probably didn't tell her parents because of whatever the family dynamics probably could have been, minimization, dismissing, or there was no safety there, so she confided in her boyfriend at the time and perhaps friends. But we see this very common in blended families when the picture of the happy family comes before the safety and the feelings of the children, Nancy.
To Spencer Ehrenfield, known as the cruise lawyer, that's one of his specialties. He's the founder of Ehrenfield Trial Lawyers. He's also an author. Spencer, thank you for being with us. Before I take you down the garden path of cruise ship law, you had to confront this at some point in court. One in four women, look around you, one in four women and or girls have been sex assaulted in some way. Bam. Yet, we know it's not reported. We know that the statistics do not bear out that it is reported. There is shame attached to it. The girl, woman, thinks it's her fault. Wow, did I lead him on? Was that my fault? Society enforces it. Why is she out with a short skirt on? Why is she out at a bar by herself? Ad nauseum. The victim is always blamed. And I wonder in this case, if this little girl, it goes to this Titusville Christian school, wants to be a canine handler. That's her aspiration. Was afraid no one would believe her or even blame her. What about it, Ehrenfield?
Yeah, unfortunately, it's very true, Nancy. Both men and women who are the victims of sexual assault are very reluctant to come forward for all the reasons you just spoke of. The guilt, the shame, the stigma, and all my years of representing victims of sexual assault on cruise lines, both men and women, that many of them have been victimized before. This is not the first time they have been the victim of sexual abuse. So they have this compounded emotional paralysis that stops them from reporting it. And Nancy, If they do, the cruise lines, in my experience, are the least helpful to them in getting them the care they need and preserving the evidence of these types of assaults. And the cruise lines are guilty of not reporting them because those reports have to be put on the Department of Transportation website that will list the number of sexual assaults that happen per cruise line per quarter. And if they're not reported, the cruise lines don't have to report it. And if they're not reported and not
publicized, my stars, that's an incredible fact.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Now, earlier, Dr. Janie Lacey was describing how some girls may not come forward and tell their own family about a family member or relative that is assaulting them. She brought up that this was a blended family. Well, it's very blended. Listen.
By the time Anna is five, Christopher Kepner is having an affair with a teenage babysitter. When Tabitha Donahue turns 18, Chris marries her, and they have two children together. Heather has a hard time maintaining a relationship with Anna due to the bitter divorce with Chris.
We have reached out to Anna's family. We have not heard back, and I want to remind everyone that nobody has been charged tonight, and I'm wondering why. We are told, Dr. Kendall Crowns, that she, quote, fought for her life. How do we know that? How could we possibly know that? Tell me, in a nutshell, how would we know she, quote, fought for her life? There's evidence.
Often with strangulations, the evidence is trying to get the object off your neck. So you'll see scratch marks on the neck from the individual's fingernails themselves. You can also see injuries on the person who is the suspect in the case as well, scratches on their face, scratches on their arms. If you see intense petechial hemorrhages or small pinpoint hemorrhages on the face, you know that the compression may have been released and then brought back, and it could be that sign of a struggle as well. As well as the bruising on her neck could be from her thrashing about trying to get the restraint off her neck. So there's a number of signs that could show that she fought back to try and get out of the hold.
Dr. Kendall Crowns, you're amazing. You just told me two things I hadn't already thought of. You mentioned that if the stranglehold had been put on her and then released, and she still kept fighting, and it was put back, you're saying that that would result in additional petechial hemorrhage, which is all the stress. You know, when you're wearing, you're getting your blood pressure, right? And it feels like part of your arm is going to blow up because of the pressure. It gets so tight, right? That's what happens to your eyes. The pressure is so tight that the tiny blood vessels in your eyes hemorrhage. They burst. And you see that in asphyxiation, strangulation, be it manual or ligature or mechanical. So explain to me what you were saying. If the pressure had been put on her neck, released, and put back, what would you see as evidence of struggle?
So again, that would be the petechial hemorrhages that you're talking about, the little pinpoint hemorrhages you see in the eye, but you also see them in the periocular region or around the eyes as well. Can be throughout the face, the gums. And what happens is it only takes a little bit of pressure to compress your jugular, which is 4.4 pounds, and your carotid, which is 11 pounds of pressure. And once those are compressed, you do still have a little bit of vertebral artery circulation coming in. But what happens when those are released, all of a sudden that blood comes rushing back into your head. And then if the compression comes back again, that blood is trapped a second time. And then that can cause the petechial hemorrhages to become more expressed or more pronounced because you keep getting that blood flow restored and then compressed and then restored and then eventually completely choked off or constricted. And that's why you'll see more and more bursting of the hemorrhages because of the blood keeps coming back in and then getting stopped.
That helped me a lot, but I still have one question regarding what does it prove? Is it probative? Would the original petechial hemorrhages look different than the second round of petechial hemorrhages? I mean, can I look at her petechial hemorrhages and determine that the pressure had been applied, released, applied, again, could I tell that strictly from the petechial hemorrhage alone?
No. No, there would be no way. It's just if they're really pronounced. Well, I'm telling you the science, but if it's really pronounced, you can get an idea that there's been more blood flow restored. But if there's just minimal petechial hemorrhages that occurred initially, it won't be necessarily different. It's just that the fact that there's more of them means that there was more blood flow, more
and
circulation.
And you said something about thrashing her head back and forth. I'm trying to look for evidence proving a struggle because we have been told, quote, she fought for her life. You mentioned scratches. Got it. Agree. But what did you say about her thrashing her head back and forth, which would indicate a struggle? So how can I tell she thrashed?
Put the neck in a carotid sleeper hold and she starts pushing against the pressure on her neck, that can cause the bruising. Also internally, when the skin is dissected up and you look at the neck muscles, you can see stretching hemorrhages of the neck muscles from them trying to pull out of the hold as well. So you can see that internally, like hemorrhages in the musculature that show that she was violently fighting against the constrictive process on her neck.
Anna excuses herself from dinner early, not feeling well. Surveillance footage shows Anna walking back to and entering the room she shares with her brothers. After eating, the teen boys come back to the room before the youngest sibling ventures out again to explore, leaving Anna and their stepbrother alone.
Anna's brother heard a heated argument between them in their cabin the night before Anna was found dead. He heard the stepbrother yelling at Anna, the sounds of furniture overturning, and screams from inside their room.
He heard him yelling at her, like, in a harmful way of, like, shut the hell up and stuff like that. Like, something was, like, banging around and stuff, and, like, the chairs were getting thrown around in the room.
From Inside Edition.
There's an investigation conducted by the FBI arising out of sudden death of 18-year-old Anna Kepner.
The little girl was wrapped in sheets, possibly a blanket. It was a full 24 hours before her body was found. Anna Kepner, the teen cheerleader, dead on a Carnival cruise ship. The cruise ship insisting there was no alcohol served to teens. But in a videoed court hearing, a lawyer says they were drinking. What is the truth? Don't know yet. Because in the last hours, a gag order has been placed. In other words, the medical examiner can't speak. Everybody's clamped down. Nobody can speak. Why? Why is that? That's very, very unusual. But we're learning a lot because of divorce proceedings. Listen.
Court records from stepmom Chantel Hudson's divorce indicate her 16-year-old son and his stepbrother may be a suspect in the teen's murder. The FBI has remained silent. No charges have been filed.
I would have difficulty in them putting the 16-year-old on the stand because I don't want anything done that would incriminate the young man.
So I believe what they're saying. Shannon Butler joining us, WFTV, on this case from the very beginning, joining us out of Florida. You've got ongoing divorce custody proceedings. And in those, the mom of the teen stepbrother files an emergency hearing saying, I'm not answering any questions. Nobody's taking the stand because it could hurt my son's right to a fair trial. A fair trial on what? Obviously, the Anna Kepner murder.
Yeah, that was the first we had heard about the stepbrother being a suspect. We didn't get any of that from investigators. But then you go into this, you know, separate court case, and that's how that information was revealed. And that's what kind of started everybody now asking these questions. And if you, you know, listen to the family members about that brother, they talk about how he was very, very distraught over this, how they had to, he had to be hospitalized, the behavior.
Wait. The teen stepbrother was distraught, correct?
That's what they say.
Okay. Was he distraught about Anna being dead or about him being a suspect?
That's still the question. But the family was very, very clear that he was very, very upset after this happened and had to be hospitalized.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Spencer Ehrenfeld joining us, the cruise lawyer. He's handled so many cruise ship cases, typically for the complainant, the alleged victim, not the cruise line. He's got so many, I tried to count them, couldn't count them. Spencer, we were told that the teen brother was so distraught that he had to go in the hospital. Then he was miraculously released from the hospital. He wasn't wearing a Band-Aid. He wasn't on crutches. Why was he in the hospital? Was that a delay tactic? Then we were told he was, quote, so upset he, quote, couldn't talk to FBI investigators. Sounds a lot to me like invoking your right to remain silent.
100%, Nancy. And it also a destruction of evidence, because when he went to the hospital, I'm sure that he changed his clothes. I don't know what happened to his clothes. I'm sure he was cleaned, and his fingers and what's under his nails and all sorts of things that would have been invaluable evidence to the investigators and prosecutors in this case were probably lost by that trip to the hospital. It really interrupted the chain of custody of a lot of evidence that would have been left on him, including potentially bodily fluids and things that may have been on his hands or on his clothes.
You know, Spencer Ehrenfeld, you are my own personal chamber of horrors. I hadn't even thought of that yet. The fact that he goes straight into a hospital setting and his clothes could be God knows where. Robert Crispin, that's important. I want to see his clothes. I want to look for microscopic evidence. I want to look for blood. I want to look for sperm. I want to look for her blood. And yes, I want to see his underwear for obvious reasons. It's probably all gone, Robert.
It probably is, Nancy. Hence the long delay before the ship got back to locking down the crime scene, locking down the people, their clothing, not letting anyone go anywhere, intermingle, talk to people, separating everybody. It's a recipe for disaster. Those clothes tell investigators and prosecutors and judges and juries so much information. It's insane the information that comes out of just your clothes, or what comes from underneath your fingernail, or what comes from actually on your body. Nancy, come on, how many times have you known or heard where a fingerprint is actually pulled from a body? Somebody else's fingerprint.
Also, because of this court hearing, we hear allegations that the teens had been drinking. Is that true? We don't know yet. Listen.
We feel there are some circumstances regarding that, the 16-year-old and the mother's judgment regarding that cruise, that would affect, you know, obviously that her ability to care for the minor child, the 9-year-old. The 16-year-old was allowed to drink. The teenagers were given their own room in which to stay. Just a lot of circumstances that showed that the mother in this case was not exercising appropriate supervision over this child.
And of course, the cruise ship is vehemently denying that the teens had alcohol. Of course, the family is stunned. They've got Anna dead, stuffed under a bed. They've got the 16-year-old, reportedly a target. Listen.
He was a good student.
Played soccer.
He played soccer. Very quiet young man. He had demons, I think, in his past, and he was trying to deal with those.
Barbara and Jeffrey Kepner are shocked Anna's 16-year-old stepbrother is being eyed as the suspect in her murder, describing them as two peas in a pod and very close. She says the teen was distraught when he learned Anna's body was found and couldn't speak during an initial interview with FBI agents. Barbara says the teen claims he can't remember what happened and was hospitalized for psychiatric observation when they arrived back in Miami.
He was an emotional mess. He couldn't even speak. He couldn't believe what had happened.
That from our friends at ABC. Did you hear that? Dr. Janie Lacey joining us, licensed psychotherapist. He was an emotional mess. He couldn't speak. He couldn't believe what happened. He was in the room when it happened, according to circumstantial evidence. Unless we want to believe she choke-held herself and stuffed herself under the bunk. Tonight, no charges. What does that mean to you? An emotional mess. Couldn't speak. Couldn't believe what happened.
It means a couple things, Nancy. In that interview, her talking about his demons. So did the family know that he had some struggles and they weren't adequately addressed? And then the critical question to me becomes, then where were the adults if they were aware of these demons? And if he's emotionally distressed in these types of things, right, that can be a shock, truly a shock, because we do have situations, Nancy, where when people go into what we would call a narcissistic type of rage, when they get some type of rejection or they're not getting the things that they want, that in that moment, the heightenedness of their emotional regulation goes, and they can have these moments where they kind of black out, so to speak. And then when they come to, there's a gravity of what has happened to in their behaviors in the situation. So, you know, it also could be the consciousness of guilt. When you have the consciousness of guilt, those emotions can come on strong. So I would probably say it's somewhere in those two realms, Nancy.
Then you have the whole other can of worms with the bio mom. What are we hearing from her?
He never once tried to call me, get a hold of me, and anything when she died. I found out through Google.
Heather says on top of discovering Anna died through internet searches instead of her father, Kapner also told her she wasn't welcome at Anna's celebration of life service. She claims Kapner threatened to have her arrested. Heather wore a disguise to her own daughter's memorial so she could say goodbye in peace. Heather is not mentioned in Anna's obituary.
I'm going to put a wig on and wear some really tall shoes because I'm 4'9".
Wish to an inside edition. And back out to Robert Crispin, private investigator, Crispin Special Investigations. This is his turf. He's joining us from Port of Miami. Did you hear that? The teen stepbrother is too distraught to speak. First goes into a psychiatric hold. Then he comes out really quickly. Guess he wasn't that ill. Now he's too upset to talk about what happened in the room where he and Anna were alone, and she ends up stuffed under a twin bed. Too upset to speak. He's too upset about, quote, what happened. He also told someone he couldn't remember what happened. So what is that, a temporary blackout?
So that's not uncommon. They don't remember things. Oh, I feel so bad. I got to go to the hospital. I can't believe what happened. I don't remember. Nancy, go back in the history of this kid. There's reports out there that he's had demons. I want to know, what are his demons? I want to know, did those demons come to light in that cabin with Anna?
Why do I care about his feelings? I do not care about his feelings. I care about her dead body, which, by the way, she's been cremated, so I certainly hope they got all the evidence that they needed to get from her body. But that said, why do I have to keep hearing about him being upset? She's dead.
Oh, that's,
I'm upset about her death, not about his feelings.
I understand, but that's very, very important to a prosecutor and law enforcement. Because how many times, Nancy, have we had a suspect who killed someone, never went to church in their life, they're a suspect, we can't prove it yet, and all of a sudden now they found God. They go to church every single day. That's a sign.
I'm so glad you said what you just said, because Shannon Butler, investigative reporter, WFTV, you heard what Crispin just said. The teen has not been charged. Why has the teen not been charged? That said, he's not even being held as a suspect. He is walking free. He is, quote, under watch. Under watch by who? Who's watching him?
Well, that's the frustration from the family and, frankly, this community. Along the coast there, that's the frustration. Like, when is something going to happen? When is there going to be an arrest? When are the answers going to come out? There's just so much we don't know about this case because the FBI has not been transparent with their information, their investigation, which is not unusual for the FBI. But there's lots of information that still is not out there. We can only assume that they're building the case and that something will happen soon. But there is no timeline for that. We don't know how long we'll be sitting here waiting, and this family will have to wait for some kind of answer here.
If you know or think you know anything about Anna's murder, mechanical strangulation, please call 754-703-7000. 2000, repeat, 754-703-2000. It could be something that you observed. It could be something your child told you that Anna said. It could be something the teen boy said. If you know or think you know, please help with this investigation. It is ongoing, and tonight, still no charges. We remember an American hero, Officer Alec Sanders, Alhambra PD, California, just 28, killed in the line of duty, leaving behind a grieving fiance. American hero, Officer Alec Sanders.
Nancy Grace signing off. Goodbye, friend.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.